he broke through this barrier I had built, take up such space and residence in my mind that it was oppressing me. I felt the Lord saying, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. At what point, when you felt weary and heavy laden, did those words give you rest? Did it breathe hope into you? Did it give you revelation? Did it make you feel safe? That it made you feel valued? It actually did the opposite. It trained you to not feel, to numb yourself, to just think that you're overreacting. This was the first time I felt a loving, gentle voice telling me, it's okay. I see what you're carrying.
Rebuilding Ruins is a podcast aimed at tackling heart issues. Let's jump straight to the deep end, because who has time to be sitting in the shallow? We will delve into scripture and use that as our foundational truth, in which we talk all things that have affected women, past, present, and future. So get your tools, ladies. We ride at dawn.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Rebuilding Ruins. I'm your host, Amina. Yes, we are in a different house. We are kind of making the rounds in Virginia. The first house was just such a charming Cape Cod style home. This is us. And then we came to this house and oh my gosh, I fell in love with it. The moment we drove up, it is got all the Little Women vibes, you know, like the March girls. It is so sweet. It just reminds me of Marmee and the girls. It is an old farmhouse and is so absolutely charming. I just love anything old and rustic and just paired with new, more modern furniture and, you know, decor and that type of thing. And they did such a beautiful job with decorating. I'm like, oh my gosh, this seems like a writer's retreat, you know, like an artist retreat, somewhere you would just come to get your inspiration and get your creativity flowing. It's secluded enough. Reminds me a little bit of home. I love where we live, but it just satisfied that desire of home. But we are so far surviving Virginia. I'm excited. Once my husband's done doing the work portion and we can actually start delving into the fun part of our trip and go do some sightseeing and take the kids to do some more exploratory stuff. So I'm so excited to look at some more historical sites. We want to go check out Jamestown and stuff like that. So I was actually in the DC area for the Million Women event that was in DC in October with a good friend of mine and my daughters. It is so awesome to be able to come back here with my kids because I love the DC area. You always read about it, but once you get here and you experience it and you see the sights, you're like, oh my gosh, this is like a whole other level. I'm so glad that I chose to go through the hassle of doing it. And so I'm excited to be able to get to enjoy it with the kids that didn't get to come with us and see all the historical everything. It makes you appreciate our country and fall in love with where we came from and our origins and the stock of what an American is all about, and seeing the Lincoln Memorial and the Jefferson Memorial and the war memorials, and just being so proud of our men and women who so bravely fought for our freedom that we can, you know, podcast and homeschool and do all the things. And, so it really makes you proud and reminiscent. Oh, this is where I came from. This is being an American. I love that. I love all the patriotism, everything. So we're actually going to be around for Trump's inauguration. I don't know if we're going to actually attend, do the overflow area, but we're kind of debating that. I don't know what the weather is going to be like. I told Andrew, you know what? Why don't you go with some of the older kids and I'll stay back with the littles and, you know, just kind of send me the details because, you know, we're getting over a sickness that just will not go away. My God, we are flowing from respiratory to stomach bug and it's like this respiratory thing just does not want to go away. It just lingers. It just holds on. It just sinks your claws into you and will not let go. So we got some of our kids on antibiotics and I'm hoping that it will kick it because it has been a nightmare. Like sleep is non-existent because, you know, they're waking up in a coughing fit and it just gets crazy. Well, we'll see how that goes. My husband and I are just ones to just take things as it comes. We are for sure the kings and queens of spontaneity. It was one of the things that drew me to him when I first met him because I'm very much that way. But becoming a mom has kind of forced me in the opposite direction. But I don't know, I've never seemed to fully release the spontaneity in me. I've always just loved that. My husband and I, we just get bored easily. So it's so nice that, you know, he has a job where if we're just like, where are you going? How long are you going to be on for? I think we're going to come along with you or, you know, just kind of change things up a little bit. I don't know. You know, you kind of battle between, do you want to be stuck in the car for hours with a bunch of kids or should we just stay home and go through the mundane. You know, things tend to be really mundane when you're a mom and you're just like, I need a break in routine. I'm going to lose my mind. Same thing every day. And then there are seasons where I'm like, oh my gosh, I just need some stability right now because I am so tired of the ebbs and flows. Out of all of our children, out of all 10, we only have one that it really needs organization and structure. It needs to know what to expect in her day-to-day. She just does not like any unexpected things at all, good or bad. She's just like, nope, I got my routine and I am sticking to it. And I try to tell her, listen, I think that's great. I think that's fabulous, but always just leave room for when things may not go your way. Just don't fall apart. Just don't, because nothing is guaranteed. I wish it were, but it's not. So she's the one to just, she's always been that way. She came out that way. So I love that about her. But the rest of our kids, they're all just like, where are we going? Yeah, woo, let's do it. So they just kind of, they're with whatever sounds good at the moment. And I'm good with that. So, but anyways, I thought that for today's episode are just issues that I have encountered in my life. And I find that it is not just in my own backyard, but it's just been a common theme with many men and women that I have brushed shoulders with. I feel like there's just an issue of orphans in this generation, like massively. It is somewhat devastating and absolutely sad. It wasn't actually too long ago. It was maybe, let me see here, a little over a year ago, we were looking to foster through a kinship two amazing, amazing young girls. And, you know, we were going through all the emotions of, am I equipped for this? Can I handle this? What are we going to do? And at the same time, these amazing young girls were in such a horrific situation. And we're just like, if not us, then who? And so we stepped up and it was so freaking scary. I'm not even going to lie. I'm like, I don't even know how I'm going to do this, But, you know, everybody was, you know, we talked about it as a family and we prayed about it. And, you know, we were just so prayerful along the entire journey because it's a big commitment, you know? And I'm like, no matter what, we were just praying and trusting that God was going to unfold whatever his perfect plan was for them. And so we were just working with the caseworkers and just kind of in between. It was between us and another family. And they ended up getting placed with the other family. They felt like they were a better fit. And I have to say they are, oh my goodness, they are so amazing, the family that they got placed with. And so it was just a roller coaster. So when they weren't placed with us, you know, we went through a little bit of a grieving period where we were really bummed. And but at the same time, we were just so happy for them. They would be able to find that stability and hopefully still stay connected. And but when we delved into that world of foster care and got to really see the nitty-gritty of what goes on, it is absolutely heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking that there aren't enough homes for these children. It's heartbreaking. So many kids age out of the system and never really develop a connection with a family that they that can kind of shepherd them throughout life. And also just what the caseworkers have to go through, what they see, what they experience on a day-to-day basis and how it wears on them. You know, that whole world, it's so dark, but it is also so necessary. It's where Jesus is, you know, it's where he would be. It's rough. It's really rough. And so when my husband and I experienced that, seeing the emotional toll that it takes on kids that are constantly being shuffled back and forth, and the heartbreak when they just want, they want to be with their biological family. They want to be connected and rooted with their family. And you know, a lot of times they resort to desperate measures in hopes that they will get to be placed back with their family. And when it doesn't pan out, it's hard for them. It's hard because they're trying to navigate this world that they should not have to. And so we got to have front row seats. And when I tell you, we were, it was an emotional roller coaster. It really was. So anybody out there that has fostered, adopted, that is a social worker, caseworker, anything in that field, hats off to you. So much respect that you are really advocating for the least of these and really fighting for them. We were watching The Sound of Hope. It was around that time. My gosh, that movie, it will break you. I love that they didn't like romanticize the world of fostering, but they really showed the toll that it takes on the family, the way it changes the dynamics, but how worthy of a cause that it is. And when Jesus calls us to pick up our cross and follow him, this movie was a beautiful picture of that. And you see how this community, it was a community in Texas, and it started with the pastor's wife who wanted to pour into a foster child and have them come stay with her. And she just started a wildfire. And next thing you know, everybody in the church is now fostering. This is now the mandate of the church. And it is a small church. It's a small community. And this community went from not having enough families to sustain the amount of children that were to sustain the demand of children that needed homes, to now all the children were there was the need was met. The church had met the need and there was no children on the books. They had all been placed. Like they literally turned it around completely. It was so it is so amazing. And then, you know, they share the journey and the, and where many of these children, like how these people's yeses, when they didn't have enough space in their house, they didn't have all the things like beds, just the basic necessities to take these kids in, but they were trying to make it work because they really felt like they were called to this. And they were leaning on each other for, it was so beautiful, the power of family. And it was the power of the church family that were uniting, were a united front, that they were linking arms. Like, we are going to hold the line for these kids, as difficult as it is and as hard as it is, and as much as we want to give up and send them back and not do this anymore and return back to business as usual because this tearing us up. And they didn't. When one family couldn't handle it anymore, another family in the church stepped in and they were like, it's okay. We'll take it. We'll take the child. And, you know, they would celebrate the child when he would come into the new home and throw a little party. There was such a commitment. It was so beautiful. Even an extension outside of the foster and adoption world, there is orphan spirits. And I'm going to be the first one to confess to you, I am one of them. I was one. I'll say this, was, right? I've come across so many other people like myself. We're all asking the same question. Where are parents? Why are we navigating life, you know, without them? You know, I remember my parents would tell me, when I got married, well, you don't need me anymore. And I'm like, okay, I don't know. But then as you grow and you come into being a mother, a wife, you're like, oh my God, no, I do need you. Come back. I don't know what I'm doing. This is not what I signed up for. I don't know what to do. But it's parenting in a biblical way, like in a way that is offering wisdom and biblical insight and using the Bible as a foundational tool. Because oftentimes with parents, they direct their kids in the direction of their trauma. So like, for example, you know, my mom was a single mom and she struggled. So if, you know, any insight and wisdom she would share with me was stemmed from her experience, her negative experience that she did not want me to go through. And it wasn't necessarily because she felt a prompting from the Lord or she, you know, she had healed from that place, but it was like, look, I don't want you to go through what I went through. So don't do this, you know, or don't do that or leave or, you know, whatever it was. And when we give advice to our children, I try so hard to, even if I don't know the answer, to just kind of step back, because this is something that it could be a pivotal moment. And kind of like when our son was on and sharing about his experience with Lyme disease, you know, he was really struggling with, you know, wanting to get put on medication and things like that. And I'm not anti that stuff, but I'm also like very careful because I know the side effects. And so when he came to us and was like, I'm really struggling, I was like, you know, I walked away from that conversation. I was like, oh God, what do I do? How do I respond? You know, it was the first thing I did was fall on my knees because I'm like, what should I do? You know, I'm ready to, do we need to take him to a doctor? Which doctor? Because it could be, it's a pivotal moment for him. And if we just take a misstep because we are acting out of a place of desperation, it could be the wrong thing. And I'm so glad that in that moment, you know, we've made many stupid choices, but in this moment, you know, I was so we were so prayerful. And in this, God was leading and making things happen organically. And he was asking a lot, a whole lot of my husband and I. And we were having to let him go much sooner than what we had originally anticipated. But one thing I had always put in my mind was my children are not mine. They are God's first. So any decision I make, I will inquire of the Lord on that because they are His. My job is to shepherd them and put them in the direction that the Lord is leading. And it was not easy. My husband was literally bawling and he doesn't cry a lot. So it was really hard because he's like, oh my gosh, like, what are we doing? And you know what? The Lord even confirmed it in giving us both dreams about Maddox and even giving us the same exact, I want to call it a vision. I don't know what you would call it, but I guess it kind of is, you know, when Maddox came out of the meeting for the interview, immediately I just saw the picture of Moses's mom and her putting Moses in the basket and putting him in the water. And I just felt my heart drop. Oh my God, no. No, what are you asking? Oh my God. And I just saw the life in his face, like just, you know, so much life breathed back in. He just had a sense of purpose. And I was like, gosh, you know, and I just felt like, are you going to get in the way of your prayers right now? Is this what you're going to do? Or what are we doing? I mean, I'm like, pick a lane, girl. But I had this eerie sense of peace, even in the difficulty. And I'm just so proud that we said yes. And we're able to release him, and that it is such a paramount thing that as parents, we don't direct our children in their course of life based off of, you know, bad experiences we had and it projecting our fear onto them. It lends itself to continuing a generational curse. And I think that because so many of us have been orphaned in a sense, and I'm not saying like I don't have parents, I do have them physically here. Orphaned can be maybe they weren't there emotionally, maybe there's just a whole lot of emotional aspects that have been lacking that, you know, that you needed. I don't know how many of us even feel not only have lacked, but had to be a parent to our parents, you know, because they just were always in need of something or in need of you. And you just sense that. And so you were more of a provider for them than they were for you. And, you know, I try to be careful. I'm trying to be careful when I talk about my parents because I love them so deeply. I've always been very devoted to my family and loyal to a fault, to a point of breaking to a very unhealthy place. And it was something that the Lord had totally yanked me out of. And it allowed their voices and their influence to kind of start dissipating the more that time went on and they weren't as present in my life. It was so hard. In one sense, it was very freeing because I don't think I realized the level of oppression until they were gone. I know that's kind of like a strong word, but that's probably the one that I would use to best describe what I had felt. And I didn't know it at the time, you know, and I always felt like I was doing the Christian daughter duty by being there and allowing them to have more of a say than what they probably should have had. And to me, it was like, well, I'm honoring my mother and my father, you know, I'm doing what God would call me to do, you know, I'm being a servant, knowing that they didn't really have anybody else. And so feeling like, you know what, I'm really like all that they have. So I don't want to let them down. I want to be able, if they need money, I want to be able to, you know, loan it to them or give it to them. I never expected anything back, never asked for a dime of anything we gave back. If they needed a car, we gave them a car, you know, whatever they needed, we would give to them. I gave to them with no expectation because I just felt like it was my duty. It was my obligation as a daughter and out of love and respect. I didn't want to withhold anything from them. And so I was in such a place of devotion to them more so than to God. And that was something I did not realize until they weren't in my life or as much as what they were. And I was just kind of like, oh my gosh, that was so hard for me because there was so much of their influence that they had that wasn't producing good fruit in our family. And I just remember growing up always feeling sick to my stomach with fear and anxiety. And I would feel that at times with the presence of one of my parents in the house. There was always this unpredictability, like I don't know when they're going to freak out or when this is. And I just remember thinking, why do I have to feel this way at 40, you know, or 30, 38, 39, however old I was at the time, and feeling that way. And then I started thinking about the story of Paul, and I was like, this is just the thorn in my side. I just am going to have to deal with it for the rest of my life. Until I don't have to anymore. And I would pray like God, almost like I didn't realize it at the time, but I do now, that I was pretty much making a prayer of deliverance, like God, deliver me from this situation. I don't know what to do. Like, I'm trying to be a good daughter. I'm doing what you're telling me to do. But was he? Because in the Bible, it talks about unless you hate mother, father, brother, sister, your children. Obviously, I don't think he means like hate, like kill them, but hate, being more devoted to our family. Sorry, guys, I'm just realizing I got Maverick's little marks on my shirt. I probably should have changed it, but whatever. But it's more so not being so heavily aligned with our family that we aren't doing what God is calling us to do. We're not answering his call because our devotion to our family is so strong. It's like it's overshadowing what God is calling us to, and not just calling us to, but who he is calling us to be. And so many times we're being stifled by the people around us. My kids, they love rap music. And so my daughter, she's like, Mom, NF is going to be in KC from this date to this date. Please, 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 can we go? And I was like, you know what? Yeah, let's do it. Got tickets, took the kids to the NF concert. Did I think that I was going to get ministered to at the NF concert? No, I did not. And this was coming right off the heels of a break for one of my parents. And he sang this song, and I didn't know the lyrics to most of his songs. So I was kind of, you know, looking on my Google, you know, reading the lyrics and trying to sing along. And kids are like, Mom, what are you doing? That is so embarrassing. Like, and I'm like, well, I want to sing along. I want to participate in the concert. And they're just like, oh my gosh, Mom. I had my phone out while he was singing this one song, and I am like breaking down, trying not, you know, holding it together, because it's like the kids are just vibing over there, and I do not want to be like in a puddle of tears on the floor. So we left the concert. So I'm listening to that song on the drive home. And you know, when you just listen to something, you know something's happening. You don't know what it is, but there's something getting broken off of you or something that needs to just minister to you. You know, the Lord is just ministering to you through that. And I was like obsessed with that song, and I just had to, an NF rap song. Well, this one was one of his slower jams, but I was just like, man, this song is exactly how I feel, but I just cannot articulate it. I couldn't like rightly articulate my feelings, and he was singing it, and I was like, man. And it's all about him having to break away because this relation, and it's not easy for him to do, and it was so hard, but he had to. And so you know, the Lord had to just take me through this process of just breaking a lot of false ideals that I thought were from Him. A lot of things, I was just deceived. I was deceived into thinking that there should be an undying loyalty to your family and that is your Christian duty and obligation as a Christian and as a daughter. And in a lot of ways, it broke me. It broke a lot of, it was a deterioration of my identity. It was a full-scale war in our home. It brought a lot of discord and division. And the thing is if your parents couldn't even successfully run their own home, what makes you think that when they come into your environment, they are going to be able to do justice? It is so important that you safeguard the gates of your home, that you really be careful. It doesn't matter who the person is. You have a duty and an obligation as the priest in your home to ensure the spiritual safety of everybody that God has entrusted to you. Once my parents were extracted from my lives, or at least their influence, were so heavily stripped away, there was so much realization that I had come to, and I had grieved it. And, you know, it's not the way I had envisioned for my future to look like. I actually thought it was going to look a lot different. And, you know, you have to make peace with that. And I trust the Lord's vision for my life. And I'm just going to go with what he sees. And, you know, there was a whole weeding out process. And I'm still in that process of a lot of things being weeded out of my mind, a lot of false thought patterns, a lot of lies that I believed. When we were preparing for this trip, I was so overwhelmed. I was so overwhelmed. And I was like, just kind of like, I don't even know where to begin right now. You know, I had meetings for Maverick's therapies and, you know, we were trying to get a lot of things. I was trying to get a lot of things done before we went out because on this trip, you know, because we're going to be gone for quite a bit. So there was a lot that I was trying to cram in, and then on top of packing and oh yeah. You guys get it. So I had this moment where I just felt so horribly alone, and the feelings of not really, not having any family to really depend on and be like, I need you. I need some help right now, you know. And, you know, there's probably like two members of my family that I'm still in contact with, you know, every so often. But, you know, you don't want to be a burden. And then there's the distance. But knowing that their realization hits you in those moments when you are going through times when you can really use some extra set of hands and there's no hands to be found. And I just was thinking of that. And, you know, there's just so much frustration that was building in the preparation and everything, and just wishing I had more hands, more time, more energy, more this, more that. And on top of that, battling sicknesses and all this stuff and making sure we have all the medical stuff with us. Those moments, I would always hear in my mind, this is why you should not have procrastinated. This is why you should have done this. You should have done this. Why isn't Andrew doing this? Why is it? And for the first time in my life, I heard a different voice. It was the voice of my Father, my Heavenly Father. And I just heard His voice tell me, run to me, talk to me, talk to me. Don't shut me out. Don't alienate me. I need you to talk to me. And it was just so persistent. Talk to me. Talk to me. What's wrong? Talk to me. And it was just so foreign to me because I'm like, what? No, that's not what God would say. God would tell me all the things that I should have done. Like I didn't do this. I didn't do that. I felt the Lord said that was never my voice. That was never my voice. I was never the one that was nitpicking every little thing that you should have done, that you could have done, that you didn't do. I wasn't there to bring accusations. And while you were on the floor in such a vulnerable moment, I was never there to pour more things on top of you and make you feel worthless. That was never my voice. And I ran to my bathroom to just have a moment because I just felt that the waterfall was coming. I just collapsed in my room. I just start crying. And I'm like, God, I just kept feeling, talk to me. Talk to me. Tell me what's in your heart. Don't run from me. Don't. You know, I never realized, but in those moments, I've just always told myself, like, once all the, you should have done this, you should have done that. And then I feel like crap. And then I'm just like in such a bad mood. I never gave my own self space to, you know, feel that moment, to go to God, to talk to him. And instead, it was just stuffing a lot of things, casting aside, even, you know, disregarding my own feelings. Like, girl, get over yourself. You do not have time to break down right now. You don't have time to do this. There's so much that needs to get done. You don't have time for this. And this was the first time I actually gave myself permission or responded to the Lord's invitation to just break down and cry on his lap. And I just began crying. I'm like, I can't do this. And I heard, for the first time in my life, a gentle voice, a voice of compassion, a loving father's voice. Oh my gosh, I can't even believe. It was like he broke through this barrier I had built and I didn't realize that I had. And this whole time I'm thinking this was God's voice, like telling me I'm being a baby. I'm making a big deal out of this situation. If I didn't have so many kids, then I wouldn't be so stressed out. And you know, all these things. And God's like, that was never me. And I realized I had allowed the voices of so many different family members to take up such space and residence in my mind that it was oppressing me. So when I talk about oppression, that is what I'm talking about. It feels like oppression. And I felt like the Lord was saying, you know, in my word, it says, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. At what point, when you felt weary and heavy laden, did those words give you rest? Did it breathe hope into you? Did it give you revelation? Did it make you feel safe? That it made you feel valued? It actually did the opposite. It trained you to not feel, to numb yourself, to just think that you're overreacting, that you're always a baby. And this was the first time I felt like I felt such a loving, gentle voice from God telling me, it's okay. It's okay. I see what you're carrying. I see what you're doing. You're doing such a good job. That was the first time I had like felt that and believed it. And I was like, oh my gosh, God, you think I'm doing a good job? Because I feel like I'm like, ugh. And I'm going to share what he shared with me in this moment, because I kept feeling like he was telling me, take out your notepad and I want you to document what I'm going to share with you. So I'm going to share that for all my other sisters out there that are orphaned and are going through the same thing. I pray to God, and this is where I love when God came to Solomon and he said, ask anything and I will give it to you. And Solomon said, I want wisdom. I want to know how to discern good from evil and how to judge rightly. And oh my God, that was a wake up call for how much I had taken something that I had believed to be God's voice, lived under this oppressive state, and just kept staying in this cycle of not feeling like what I felt was valuable enough to just stop and to really give myself space and time to collect. But I just, the voice, you know, that I was believing in my head was go. You don't have to stop being a baby. Stop whining. Nobody cares. Somebody's always got it worse than you. You know, there was those voices in my head. And it was like, oh my gosh, I had totally misunderstood the character of God. I did not know his character. And here I am. And I thought I did. I thought that I just wasn't ever up to par. That moment. And you know, even though I had experienced him in massive breakthrough ways where I had experienced his grace and his mercy, like when I had an abortion or, you know, would just go through other things. But I'm like, okay, that was just that moment. And then that was it. And, you know, I kind of divorced it from my day to day. Like that was a moment. And then, but then there was the day to day, there was the day to day struggles that I had. And he just so desperately wants to cleanse his daughters and his sons. He wants to cleanse his people of the residue that we have been carrying for so many years, and this whole time thinking this is God's voice, this is what God thinks of me, this is how he feels for me. And he's like, no, I want to cleanse you. I have to cleanse you. But in order for me to cleanse you, I have to remove people from your life. I have to remove the obstacles or the take you away from the job or whatever it is. And we're like, oh my gosh, why is all this stripping happening from my life? Like, I feel like everything's being taken from me. And it's so that we can encounter him and experience him. And we can't experience him with the surroundings that we are currently in and the people that we have currently in our circle or the job that we have or whatever circumstances that we are currently in that God is like removing from us. And we're experiencing loss to such a degree that we're like, oh my gosh, what is happening? Take a step back. He's doing something. He's doing something new. He's trying to take the old wines, your old wineskins, and give you new ones. You cannot go into the new season that he's called you to be in if you are surrounded by the wrong people, if you are in the wrong environment, if you have the wrong job. He is bringing you into alignment with your purpose and your destiny, and you cannot come into alignment when you are aligning yourself with the wrong voices. This was a wake-up call, and it has been a process of stripping layer by layer of wrong thought patterns, wrong behavioral patterns, wrong habits that we're forming, you know, wrong ways of coping. God's like, girl, daughter. And, you know, for a while I've been feeling like God's like, I want you to see me as your father, not as some distant being in the sky that's like floating around and I just make an appearance every so often like I'm coming for the Grammys. But I want you to see me as your father, that this is talk to me. And I've been feeling that so much lately. While I'm doing the dishes, talk to me. While I'm sweeping the floor, talk to me. While I'm changing a diaper, talk to me. We have access to God anytime. We don't have to wait for this special moment like, okay, I'm going to set aside 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock and that's when I'm going to. No, incorporate him in every day and every moment. You're driving, pray. You're at home, pray. Talk to him. And this is something that I am trying to practice and be more intentional. And I thank God that he just gives me those gentle nudges and whispers like, hey, talk to me. I'm here. Talk to me. You don't have to wait. Just because you didn't wake up early enough doesn't mean that the access has been cut. Like that was your window for us to spend time together and it didn't happen. So there you go. We'll see you tomorrow. Yeah. He is really bringing awakening to his children. It's like, the game of chess where you're trying to put all the pieces in order so that you can, you know, defeat the other team and checkmate. He's aligning us all up. He's aligning us all up, and it's time to counteract everything that has pressed against us. I love the verse in Galatians chapter 4, verse 7. So you are no longer a slave, but a son. If a son, then an heir through God. There is a clear-cut distinction. You're either a slave or you are a son or a daughter. If you're not his child, you are a slave. You are a slave. If we're not under his inheritance, under his blessing, under his leadership, then whose are we under? In Isaiah chapter 51, verse 1, it says, "Listen to me, all who hope for deliverance, all who seek the Lord. Consider the rock from which you were cut, the quarry from which you were mined." I love that verse because it talks that we are cut from the same rock that he is. Like, he is giving us this identity that you are mine. We're cut from the same substance. Like, we are fortified. You are a fortified people. And it's the same thing like when I came to DC and was loving being able to really get in touch with my patriotic roots. Like, yes, I love America. You know, I always did, but it gives you a deeper sense of appreciation when you see the monuments, when you see what our forefathers believed in and what they fought for, and why they chose to have a revolution because of tyranny and oppression. And it is time for God's people to go back to our roots and see where we were come from. What was the dream and the vision that God had intended for his people? What was the dream and the vision that, you know, Thomas Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln and all these great men that gave their life for a belief in all men being created equal and free and not living under tyranny or oppression, but being able to worship freely and having free speech? This is exactly what God is desiring. Hey, go back. I want you guys to revisit what has been fought for you on your behalf, the same way it has been for our nation. How we see it is astounding to see how many crosses and graves there are for the fallen soldiers in Arlington Cemetery. It's crazy to see that sacrifice that was made for future generations. What they did was made generational impacts. And what God is calling us to do as sons and daughters is to make generational impacts, is to make a ripple effect that will transcend not just our generation, but generations past. What is the dream and the vision that he is putting in your heart? Just because we were inherited orphan mentalities or ideals of lack or not being enough or not giving enough or poverty mindsets or divorce, whatever those generational bloodline curses have been in your family, they are no longer yours in Jesus' name. We are to step into a new inheritance, a new promise. We are now a part of a new bloodline, a blood that speaks a better word, that is stronger than death, hell, and the grave. And it's ours for the taking. And it's ours for the taking. We just have to be responsive to it. It doesn't matter how much our parents did or did not show up. Let's heal from that. We have to heal from that. And we have to stay so entwined with the Lord so that we know what his voice sounds like, so we know his characters. That was such a wake-up call where I'm just sitting in my bathroom floor like, oh my God, like, this is your voice. Like, you are so gentle and you're so kind and you're so loving and you are actually very understanding. Like, you actually care. You actually want to hear what I have to say. And as I was typing this, every so often I'll get these downloads from God and I just feel like, take out your notepad. I'm like, I know I'm going to be typing for a while. It just comes. So I'm going to share with you what I felt like God was sharing with me in that moment of weakness, because it's not a word just for me. He is so tender-hearted. Like, he genuinely is so compassionate. When it says, like, he was, and I forget the exact verse, but when it talks about when he was about to go retreat, I believe it was to the mountain to pray, he saw the crowd of people coming, and it says he was moved with compassion and just kept pressing and didn't take his rest like he had anticipated. And this is the rock that we are cut from. We are cut from a rock of a compassionate father that when he was so tired and so exhausted and ready to retreat was like, oh gosh, I'm going to give more. It's you mothers out there. It's us mothers that do that. How many times we're like, I can't take this anymore. I can't do this anymore. And then here we are re-signing back up every day. You know why? Because you carry the heart of your father. And I bet you so many of us don't even know it. You know, it's so played out when you hear, oh, God loves you. Like, no, he loves you. He cares about every aspect of your life. He cares about what affects you. He cares about what you're stuck in, cares about the people that surround you, that are weighing you down, the burdens that were never yours to carry that you're carrying. He tells us, take up your cross and follow me, follow him. We're too busy carrying everybody else's crosses. And because we're carrying everybody else's crosses, we're not carrying our own cross. And so we can't follow him because we're following everybody else while we're carrying their cross and their responsibilities that they should be carrying. Instead, we're too busy carrying it for them. We need to lay it down and carry our own. I was reading Song of Solomon, and the Shulamite woman was talking about how her skin is dark because she was forced to work out in the fields because her brothers looked down on her. Her family looked down on her, and how she's dark but lovely. And she was so busy tending everybody else's garden, but her own garden she did not tend. Arrow to my heart. I was like feeling every poetry line of that. I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah. But now, my sisters, brothers that are listening, it's time to tend your own garden. It's time to carry your own cross. It's time to lay everybody else's down, and you carry what you were called to carry. You don't carry what everybody tells you to carry or expects you to carry. You need to wash off all of everybody else's expectations that they have for you, and you need to seek the one who created you, the one who dreamed of you before the very foundations of the earth was laid. He knew he was going to bring you forth in this time, in this generation, for this purpose and this season. So you were not here by accident. You are a dream in the Father's heart. I'm going to go ahead and read to you what I felt like the Lord was sharing to me, because I feel like it'll minister to a lot of you out there. I pray that this will just wash over you, that it will wash away the lies. It will awaken you to your purpose, to your identity, to who your father is, that he is so close to us, orphaned children. We are not cast aside and without inheritance. He holds us so close. All right, these are to all my orphaned sisters who have found themselves having to become very independent because there hasn't been many people in your circle that you've been able to be dependent on. I see you. I feel you. I know you're tired. I know the feeling of loneliness engulfs you. I know you don't know who to trust. I know you're afraid to trust. I know you want to throw off the yoke you've been carrying, but it has a destination, and you're the only one willing to carry it. I know you want a shoulder to cry on. I know you want to share your heart in the ugliest moments and not fear it will be used against you. I know you want to be understood. You want someone to see past the facade of anger and pain. You want to be seen for what you have held together when everyone else abandoned you. You want to be seen for all that you gave. It's not recognition you're after. It's the heart behind all your sacrifice. It's the tears you cried every night alone. the way you navigated yourself out of situations that should have killed you, the way you tended everyone else's garden and in the process neglected your own and looked to see no one would help you till your own garden. It's waking up every morning knowing you have to do it all again alone. It's your willingness to carry what everyone else refuses to. It's your willingness to extend yourself to help others in need. You give and you give and you give. Now here you are. You gave your last dime. You gave your last drop of blood. You gave your loyalty. You gave up your pride. You gave up your desires. You gave up your dreams. You gave up your rest. You gave your sanity. You emptied yourself to the point of breaking. And when you broke, no one gave. No one gave compassion. No one gave love. No one gave understanding. No one gave wise advice. No one gave you space to dream or think. You looked up to the reality. You're alone. The sound is deafening. It's the feeling of being sucked through a vortex. The shouts of demands echo all around you. What are you going to do? How will you respond? You have seen no reward in giving. As a matter of fact, you will be accused of not giving enough. As I sit in the quiet, holding a mirror to my heart, I see the little girl with unfulfilled dreams. I see her bullied into silence. I see her wings clipped. I see her caged. I see her resigned. I see her comply. I see bloody hands from holding on to things she couldn't change. I see her discouraged heart. Every time she tried to break out of the cage, she would only run so far just to be dragged back in. She has come to realize she loved the wrong people. She devoted herself to the wrong things. She fought the wrong battles. She's heard the wrong voices, and now she's fragmented. Now what? We can't stay here. Or maybe it's better to die here. She's too strong a fighter to relent. She doesn't know how to give up. She's tried. Although she did all the right things for the wrong people, she sees all the right people have need for her. Need her to heal. Need her to dream. Need her to laugh. Need her to dance. Need her wisdom. Need her to soar. Need her to be free. She looks at her reflection and hears a different voice. Not one of condemnation, but compassion. She wants to believe in that voice, but she's afraid to believe that she's deserving of such gentleness. All she's ever known is harsh rebuke. She doesn't feel judgment, but understanding. It takes her back, and yet her heart has been ready for so long to dive into safety. She was seen all along, heard all along. She secretly believed all along. It's her superpower. It's what has kept her going. Believing in the someday. Someday she will experience love. Someday she will be heard. Someday she will be seen. Someday she will be known. Someday she will be understood. She held on to someday. She didn't make it through what she did beyond her own strength. She made it through because she was carried. Although she desperately felt alone, she never was. Everything she endured bred her to be a fighter. The heart within her pure, the love inside her strong. Her someday has arrived. It's here. She knows it. She's able to run faster because she's not carrying anyone else's weight. She's able to soar with no one holding her down. She was bred for war. Her tears have cleared her vision. Her tears emptied her of anger and bitterness. Her tears kept her heart soft. Her tears never saw the ground. Her tears were captured by the hands that carried her. Every tear she cried, he saved. He counted. He needed to know how much she was owed for all she endured. He's arrayed her in the finest armor and awarded her to be the captain of his guard, his right-hand man. She's ready. She's responded accordingly in the face of adversity. She's his daughter. She has a new name, and it's not orphan. She's been repurposed for honorable use. She never has to wonder again how he feels for her. His favor will be in such massive display. It will be known to all the universe whose daughter she is. Nothing withheld. She responded the way he did when he was betrayed. She responded the way he did when he was slandered. She responded the way he did when he was tested. She responded the way he did when he was crushed and bruised. He was able to carry her because she wanted to respond the way he did. She wanted to be like him. What seemed an impossible feat, she could finally hear and recognize his voice because her enemies are far from her. Triumph is not a word. It's a woman. What is a woman? She is triumphant. She can laugh with no fear of the future because her identity has been solidified deep within her. No lie can overtake it. She laughs with no fear because she is locked into the eyes of her enemy as she sees him for what he is. Not an intimidating force set out to destroy her. Bigger than her, stronger than her, smarter than her. Now that she knows who she is, she can laugh at him as she comes to the realization he has been afraid of her all along. Everything he intended to destroy her was the weight she used to strengthen her. He fears her heart, her devotion, her love, her God. Her time has come. He never expected that. But now she believes more than ever. She won't let that be taken from her. She refuses to go back. She's a memorial of womanhood. Tasked with a mission, her eyes are fixed. And so she laughs. Do you hear it? She laughs. That's what the Lord gave me on the bathroom floor when I felt so alone. And I beat myself up for feeling alone. And I beat myself up for not handling my emotions. I beat myself up for allowing myself to cry. He was there. He was there telling me to release it. He was there restoring. He was there reigniting. He was there imparting. He was there to establish identity. He was there. This is the voice of our Father. Do you know it? Do you feel it? When he talks to you, do you feel oppressed? Do you feel weighed down? Do you feel less than? Do you feel condemnation? Or do you feel hope? Do you feel lighter? Do you feel empowered? Do you feel bold and brave? Do you feel like he's imparted his identity into you to remind you who you are and whose you are and why you do what you do? We need to know his voice. We need to know his voice. I don't think you heard me. We need to know his voice. It's not a joke. It is a difference between life or death. It's our pivotal moment. We need to be the Shulamite woman that is leaning on her beloved in the wilderness. I don't think we're desperate enough. I know I wasn't, and I know I need to be way more than what I am now. We got to get there. It's important. Depends on us. Are we going to answer the call? Are we going to rise up? Are we going to be the Deborahs that when we saw that village life ceased, that we arose when we saw that the leaders and rulers who were supposed to be doing something and they failed, they dropped the ball? Look around you. How many times do we see a pastor making headlines that has fallen and is unwilling to repent for what he has done that has brought trauma to some girl or woman and has been entrenched in lies for decades and yet has built massive ministries? This is how it's evident that the church is falling. And it's not God's church. He's tearing down because he is rebuilding. And it's us women. We have a pivotal role in that. We're not the Delilahs that will strip men of their strength. We're not the Jezebels that are going to do things through manipulation and control. We are the Esthers that will fast and call others to fast and pray. And just like Esther, although her name was changed, it did not change her purpose. It did not change her destination. It did not change her identity. Although we were once labeled orphans, it doesn't change the calling and the destination and the purpose that God has for you. It doesn't change. We are called to make lasting generational impacts. Our stories will be told just like the woman who broke her alabaster jar. Such a simple act of worship. This is who we are. We are the Marys that will sit at the feet of Jesus. We will do things with strategy and purpose. We will not be like one that beats the air, but we will have focused aim and strategy. Our punches will land, and when they land, they will make a massive impact. God is cleaning house. Do you see it? We have a role, and there's a message of salvation that he's wanting to spread. He wants to turn us back to the basics, to the 101. Let us embrace salvation. Let us embrace the cross. Let us not be like ancient Israel and the people again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. And so the Lord allowed them to be taken over by another nation. No, that's not going to be us, not this generation. And we need to be the women that rise up and say, not on our watch, not with these children. We're not going to let them be carried off to the Babylonian ways and doctrines of transgenderism and false ideologies and identity crisis and kids that are filtering in and out of foster systems and gravitating towards gangs and drugs and sexual promiscuity and all these things trying to find their identity. Us women need to be the ones to speak life into these orphan children because we were one. And that's what makes us powerful. God, I pray for all of the builders out there that are carrying the shovel in one hand and the sword in the other. Lord Jesus, I pray for a download of revelation that we will be able to distinguish your voice from the voice of the accuser. Father, do what you need to do to bring us into alignment with what you are calling us to be, how we can step into what you have dreamed for us, what you have designed for us to step into. God, may we not shrink back in this hour, but may we run forward with focus and purpose and passion and desire and zeal, righteous zeal for our King, Lord, and for our beloved children out there that are cast aside and orphaned. I pray that you will birth within each and every woman and man a heart of a father and a heart of a mother. Then we will be carriers of the Father's heart. We repent for not taking things as seriously as you do or brushing issues aside that are grieving your heart. Father, I pray that you would bring us in alignment with what your dream and your desires are. I ask for refocused energy, healing for our hearts. God, tear down the altars that we have built within ourselves so that we will not eat off the enemy's table and have one hand on the enemy's table partaking of control or manipulation, but Father, that we will be the Deborahs that look around and rise up and call people to the challenge, to the leaders to rise up as they were called to do, reminding people of their calling in the vision that has been cast and the God that has called them out of oppression in Jesus' name. Father, awaken us and establish us, and we thank you that you have established us as your daughters and heirs to your heart, that you've called us to be heirs in which you've died for us to have. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you for joining me today, and I love it if you can take a moment to like, comment, and subscribe if this has blessed you. And be sure to share this with your fellow sisters. You guys be blessed and stay warm out there.